Hello, everybody. How are you doing today? Happy Thursday. Got to wait for 1 minute, but welcome to week 13. Here we are. Oh, moving forward. All right, here we are, top of the hour. Hello. I'm so happy to see you all today. As I've mentioned to you, I launched a certification program around teaching other coaches this material, and it's really interesting, and it's interesting to do it in tandem with this because, you know, of course, they're just beginning on the journey of understanding all of this, and it makes me appreciate them, and it makes me appreciate you even more than ever. So thank you for being here. So now you'll be hearing me say this a lot because we're coming to the end. We're on week 13, and I really want this is where I say the rubber meets the road. This is where we're going to leverage and apply everything we've learned, and we're going to make traction here. We are going to make change. We're going to take action. We're going to do what we've learned because I really want the end of this program to be a milestone for you where you feel you've made some really important changes. And again, I have to say, not everybody's been on the calls. Not everybody's been able to watch every video. You got out of this, what you meant to get out of it. But if we can put a little bit of an added push is not the right word, a little bit of an added focus, added energy to this, so that by the end we can give ourselves a hug and say, I did everything I humanly could to really incorporate this learning in this material, and I feel like I'm in a different place. So that's my wish for you. Now, we are talking about trying it on today, and this week's takeaway is to know if a direction is right for you. You must go out and try it on physically, mentally, emotionally, energetically, and spiritually. Don't leap until you've explored. And you've heard me talk about this a lot in the video I talk about. You know, I'm passionate about teaching the mistakes that I have made so that you won't make them. And, you know, I have leapt in my life, and I continue to do it. I'm a leaper. And often it can lead to pain and misery because we're running from something, we're running to something. We are, you know, not using our higher self, our highest self. And, you know, it's fascinating. I'm reading a book now, Letting Go, by David Hawkins. Basically, there's so many layers to what we're doing and how we're operating in the world that you can read a book a day and still not have arrived and have it all figured out. It's an incredibly rich and complex experience, life. And I continue to learn. I continue to see how things I say, things I do actually are trying to get me something else, and I'm not aware of it. It's just fascinating. So I'm really trying to help you peel the onion and not leap before you've done the work of knowing who you are and what you really want. So before we launch into that, does anyone have any questions they'd like to? I would love, as I'm saying, I'd love these final calls to be more about me coaching you and less about me speaking to you. Because this is our chance. So do you have any questions that you want? Oh, great, I see a hand up. Awesome. Now's your time. Let me take 15 minutes of questions, then I'll go to the slides and I'll take more questions. So we have Jackson. Jackson, is it Mississippi? I don't even know.
Yes.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Sarah Wolf.
Hi, Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm great, thank you, and just wanted to call in. I have caught up on most of the weekly calls that I've missed. I haven't had a chance to do all of the homework, but just listening to everything has been very helpful, and I am calling for a little bit of clarity.
Great.
And I have gotten clarity that my bucket is I don't want to do this recruiting career anymore, and I really don't want to work for my current employer.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's all coming back. Okay. So that's good. That's great to have that kind of clarity.
Yes, and I do have my phone interview tomorrow with the CEO about the digital marketing apprenticeship.
Which is unbelievable that you had that idea, and the next thing you know, you have an interview.
And that was all due to you saying, you know, if you're not interviewing, you don't feel worthy. And I was like, oh, my God, she got me on that one.
Wow. But, I mean, you seem to manifest it overnight, it seemed to me, right?
Yeah, well, I look at it. When I look at what I would be learning and doing in the apprenticeship, I'm like, this is written for me. This is what I want to know. When I say, what am I going to do afterwards? Do I want to work for a digital marketing agency? I don't know if you remember, but I do have a background in graphic design. I was doing print graphic design back in, you know, 10 years or more ago. And I did get out of it because I just, it just felt like rote, and it's not that interesting to me. What is interesting in this digital marketing world is, number one, it's changed so much, and I am trying to figure it out just for, I mentioned my fiance's art business and that kind of thing. I'm trying to figure out what it is, but also it's measurable. There are tools now that are interesting, and that appeals to a whole different analytical side of me.
Great.
But I don't know if I need to do this. The woman that I spoke to locally, she is a VP of marketing and has been in the world of that since the 90s, you know, so she's seen all the changes.
Yeah.
She looked at the opportunity and she said, I have reservations. She is not somebody who does that digital marketing work as far as the analytics and, you know, all of that. She's on the strategy side, but
yeah.
She thought she could get the experience with doing a combination of self-learning, like Google AdWords certifications, that type of thing, and approaching some local agencies and saying, hey, can I, you know, basically volunteer here?
So this internship is how long, Sarah? What is the parameter?
It is 8 months, and she thought that what they were asking me to do, which I won't go into all of that if you want me to send it to you, I can, but that it was a lot, and they are saying 30 to 40 hours a week. If
I
measure, they pay me, but I don't know how. And if I measure it out, meaning I don't know if they're saying, if they say, we'll pay you at the end, I'm not going to do it. I just can't, you know. If they say, we'll pay you monthly, basically it comes out to $7.63 an hour. And I would have to basically give, you know, about $8,000 out of my savings to support myself. And that is just bare bones. That is not anything, you know, and I don't have an extravagant lifestyle. So it just tells you, it comes out to $1,250 a month, you know.
Mm-hmm. So are they a reputable firm? Are you going to get something out of them that's going to be amazing on your resume?
I thought that they looked reputable, and I will take some additional steps. I do have a mentor here that I just started working with, and he gave me some really good ideas about call all these organizations in this state that they're located in. They have been around for 5 years. They are Google partner, whatever, I can't remember the exact terminology, but in other words, they are reputable by Google standards.
Sarah, go ahead. Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I just mean she just was saying, you know, hey, there's just so much going on in this world of digital marketing, and there's people that will tell you they can do all sorts of things, and, you know, then you get taken to the cleaners.
So I feel like there's a number of things you're sorting through, and this is for everyone on the call. You're probably in the same boat. There's a million things you're trying to sort through here. And we can't sort through it when it's a big glommed-up mess, right? It's like a ball of string, and you're trying to get to the middle of it. So let's pull it apart. The very first thing you said was, I'm not sure I really want to do this for a living, right?
Yeah, correct.
I don't think you can know that till you try it on more deeply. Would you agree with that? Before you even answer that, there's three questions of discernment that Trudy Griswold taught me. Trudy Griswold, the angel speak woman, she said, when you're really grappling with something, and boy, did these three questions help me, and I was stuck when I was about to get out of my master's, when I was about to graduate, I was, for a year, I agonized. What do I want to do? Do I want to start my own practice? Do I want to go work in an agency? And it would keep me up at night. And she finally said these three questions. Number one, do you have enough information to make the decision you're agonizing over? Number two, do you have to make that decision now? Number three, is it any of your business anyway? And that third question is when you get all agonized about something that actually is not within your control. It's not your business. It's your sister-in-law. It's your husband, you know. So that's also helpful because sometimes I'll start worrying about someone else's life and I'll be like, wait, that's their life. That's their decision. But the first two questions really pertain to you. Number one, you don't have enough information to make the decision, do I want to do this for a living? Would you agree?
Yes. In terms of the actual work and all of that type of stuff,
you don't know yet.
This thing is. Yeah.
Right. So you don't have to worry, do I really want to do this?
Okay.
You don't know that yet. Number two, do I have to make this decision now? So that pertains to two pieces. You don't really know if you want to do direct digital marketing, and you don't have to make that decision right this minute. You don't. Unless you feel like you want to quit right this minute. Is that what you feel?
I do. And that's just frustration with being promised things for 3 years that don't manifest. You kind of work with somebody who is just going to tell you what they think you want to hear in the moment. And, you know, you just got to look at the proof. It's like, okay, I've been hearing this for long enough. And it's not within your ability.
I have an idea for you.
Okay.
Rather than leap into digital marketing, because I think you're right, you don't know enough yet. What if you empower, you know what I always say, I'm drumming it into you like a drum. Don't leap because you're in pain. Create a transition plan that's going to set you up not to have your system completely turned inside and out. So here's my question. Could you do recruiting in another way? Three days a week, your own recruiting, your own firm, or join someone else, and save 2 days a week to explore digital marketing?
Possibly, yes. I would probably want to do it for someone else. And I will have a bit of an opportunity next week to actually be in the room with a lot of people around Mississippi who are in that world. I was asked to be the vice chair of this Mississippi chapter of the American Staffing Association, and
oh, wow.
We're all going to be in one room tomorrow next week.
So let me just ask a few more questions. Recruiting.
Sure.
Okay, you don't want your employer. Done. Leave. Done.
Mm-hmm.
This is what women stay 5 years too long. I don't know why we do. Yes. Just leave. It's really that simple. Number two, do you like any piece of recruiting? Do you still like recruiting if it weren't for this toxic boss and, employer? Would you like to do recruiting a little more for a few more years?
Not really. I'm burned out on being, it actually is, there's a trainer locally that says recruiters are social workers who like money. And there's a part of just being in the middle of two people that is exhausting to me.
Yeah.
It's just like being a therapist and I also just kind of bored. I mean, it's like, okay, this is the sales cycle and we do it and here we are. And I know I'm supposed to feel like a wonderful feeling that I got somebody a job, but really I feel like there's so many things that people don't know about that process that it's like, you were just lucky in this and you got this job versus me being a magical person or,
Well, that sounds like you're a little jaded. I mean, I remember when I worked in a recruiting firm, there is some magic that is done. There's a magic to partnering the employee with the culture. There's magic to talking to the two parties in a way that, I mean, I think you are underestimating what you do. You're just probably burnt out.
Yeah,
so here's what I would say to you. Because you don't know if digital marketing is what you want, I would not, and I'm being a consultant here, not a coach. I'm really being directive. I would not advise that you quit your job and do this other thing for 8 months and not get paid well.
Yeah.
I think what happens at the end of the 8 months if you hate it?
Yes.
Now you have no recruiting money and you have no digital marketing.
Yes.
And you see what I mean?
Very little savings.
Right. So what I would rather see you do is empower yourself in recruiting for the time being. Get out of your employer, find a better employer, and do it in a way that you can remember how cool you are. But then get some digital marketing experience. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Just try to
Can I throw something else at you, Sarah?
Yes.
I see on Facebook, and this may be because this is an alias or you don't really use it too much, but I don't get any sense of who you are, no photos of who you are. Is there a reason for that?
It's interesting, but honestly, I don't know if anybody who hasn't been through this would really understand, but I know I need to do it, so I do recognize that. I was going through chemo and radiation and all of that stuff when digital, you know, when Facebook was exploding, and I just inherently knew that it was not good for me to be seeing how wonderful everybody's life was while I was going through that. And it just, you know, made me a very private person in that regard. So, and it's actually kind of funny. It's like I was talking to a friend of mine who's a nurse, and he's like, well, you know, nurses make the worst patients. And it's like marketing people don't want to reveal themselves to other people.
I
know what you're
get
trying
it.
To do.
So let me just share, you can take this or leave it. You know, the opposite side of the spectrum is I have a friend who's 50 and single, and she just went through very serious cancer, a whole year of intense chemo and radiation. And she decided that she was going to make it as public as possible on Facebook. And we saw everything. We saw the drip. We saw the loss of hair. And she, the support that she got, and how she felt loved through the process was literally life-changing for her. And she's now on the other side, and she's dating a wonderful guy, I hear, from her parents. So I'm not saying you shouldn't be private. I'm not saying, I'm not really trying to make you wrong at all. I am saying that the way we look at things creates things.
Yeah.
So I would ask you to look at that. I understand some people want to be private, and we don't have to jump on the bandwagon of making our lives look just only perfect. You know, I have friends I've read that, you know, I wish my life were as good as it, how it looks on Facebook. And we have, you know. But I would say I feel like you're hiding.
Okay. Yeah, I am. And I was going through that at a time when, you know, it was actually before the Affordable Care Act was passed, and, you know, I barely, I mean, I got good health insurance 2 weeks before, or 2 months before I was diagnosed. I mean, it was still at a time when an insurance company could say, you know.
No, right.
And so it just
so
was a, it was a protection thing.
So you felt like you didn't want to come be honest on Facebook for because you were afraid you wouldn't get covered and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, lots of discrimination at work, possibilities. I mean, just, you know, it was a different, I mean, not being legally protected as one is now, you know, as much. I mean, my doctor literally.
Do you feel over that now?
I have worked on it a lot, and yes, I finally feel over it, and I've actually been going to a therapist that has done some EMDR.
Wonderful.
And it's really helped as far as just not feeling that fear in my body, you know, and being able to say, I'm ready to take a risk again. That was really just a huge part of it. It's just I've been through hell, and I want a normal life for a little while, you know.
Yeah, I give you so much credit. You've been through so much. So, you know, think about what I'm talking about. I really believe that when we want to create happiness in our life, we have to be a little vulnerable. And that doesn't mean you got to get out there on Facebook and share every little thing. But I think that how we are digitally is a metaphor for how we live our life.
Yeah.
And, you know, being on LinkedIn and being open and sharing stuff has changed my life and changed my career. And I just think it's something to think about. Is this helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah. I hope that gives you a little clarity.
Yes, definitely.
And wonderful. Keep us posted how it goes, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Wonderful, wonderful questions. Thank you for sharing so openly, everyone. Does anyone else have anything they want to talk about? Star 2, so I can see your hand. Let me look at your, see if anybody submitted anything. Oh, yay. Hi, Bethany. How you doing? All right. Bethany says, is it really important to post a picture on LinkedIn? I fight ageism and mommydom, so yes, I'm hiding. I'm hoping that a recruiter would read my experience and be comfortable with my knowledge and abilities and say, wow, this person is just what we're looking for. So here's what I'm going to say. It's vital you have a picture on LinkedIn. If not, people think you're hiding something, period. When I get invites, and the people don't have a photo, when I am checking someone out to see if I want to work with them, if someone's reached out to me to be a client and they don't have a photo, it's a red flag. There it is. So when you say you fight ageism, Bethany, and mommydom, do you mean internally you have a bad feeling about your age? Or do you mean you feel there's discrimination? So, you know, let me know what you feel. I'm 55, and in the work that I do, there is no ageism, because people want someone who's an expert or a career coach or a mentor or an advocate or an advisor or an interviewer who has a lot of experience behind their eyeballs. So I do not feel that 55 is a problem. Now, in corporate world, I hear you. I see it. I hear it. But there are ways around it, but hiding is not the way around it. The way around it is, here I am, and look at what I bring to the table. And, yeah, there are going to be some cultures that don't want a 50-year-old. Absolutely. Well, we don't want to be in that culture. If we're 50 and there's a job at a place that only wants 30-year-olds, we're not going to be happy at that job. So I'm really, really strong about this. You can't leave it off because it looks like you're hiding. And then the deeper question is, why are you hiding? So let me hear right back and tell me if this makes sense. Yeah, so Bethany says yes, both, and I think that means you feel it internally and you hear it. Well, I think that what you have to do is address your internal fears about it. I help a lot of people who are over 50 get amazing jobs. So you've got to let go of, you know, and I really believe this. Is there gender discrimination? Yes. Is there age discrimination? Yes. Is there body type discrimination? Yes, it goes on and on and on. There is, but is that what we're going to focus on? Is that what's going to be on our radar? Because if that is what we focus on, that is what you will attract. You will see it. It's what you're attending to, and therefore it's what you see and what you get. So what I'd ask you to do is find a way that you can give yourself evidence that people over 50 are getting fantastic jobs. And yeah, I know it's hard, but it's being done. I see it. There's people all around me and where I live who are, you know, there's a fellow who's 58 and he is in the television business as a videographer. And, you know, he was out of work and he said, it's my age, but well, now he's got work. It's not perfect. He travels a ton, but he's doing amazing things in high levels in television. We can get over this. We can navigate through this. So if you want to ask a question, get on the phone. Ah, Bethany says, yes, I hear your advice, and really at this point I have nothing to lose. Just came to this yesterday, so I will post a picture. Woohoo! All right. Way to go. Thank you. You have nothing to lose and literally everything to gain. Awesome. Thank you. Oh, Laura's on the call. Laura Neff. Thanks, Bethany. I appreciate it. Laura, how are you? She says, hi, I'm on the call today. Key point from my end, it's called social media for a reason. no picture is like showing up to a networking event with a bag over your head. I so love it. It's odd, and it's not easy or inviting to engage with. You're so right, Laura. So right. Thank you. Wow, great stuff. All right, anybody have another question? Anybody before I hit the slides? Yeah? Anything else? Let me just check my dashboard. Okay. Awesome. Well, don't hesitate. Star 2 to raise your hand, and I'm going to go to the slides now. All right. So, again, today we are talking about trying it on, and I'm pretty sure you know exactly what I mean, but let's even look at Sarah, if I can use you as an example. So Sarah had the idea she wanted to try it on, but the idea was, let me quit recruiting because I've had it, I'm done with it, I feel worn out, beaten up, done, and let me do this for 8 months. Well, that's trying it on in an extreme way. And what I want you all to remember is the mistakes we make are that we overly attach. And I think leaving recruiting, making no money, and being paid very little and doing an 8-month internship, you're going to be very attached to the hope that you like direct marketing, the digital marketing. And I did this with therapy. I loved the 3-year masters. But then after spending 30 grand, I think, 20 grand on the masters, and then going through all my savings because I hadn't been earning anything, yeah, I was pretty darn attached to the idea I better be a therapist. And the problem is when you attach like that, you remain in denial when you don't like it because you don't want it to be the case that you just spent 3 years and all your savings to end up not liking something. So this is what I mean by trying it on. Do not leap in any way, shape, or form. Because if you leap and you're not making money, you're going to be pretty desperate by the end of that. And you're going to not want to see the signs that your life is trying to show you that, no, this direction isn't right. I hope that really makes sense. So the 5 steps to trying it on, let me share about that. We want to do this before leaping. Research as much as possible. First, online. Read articles. Watch videos. Look at interviews. Let's say you want a life in digital marketing, you think. Read everything you can about what that life is like, and you can find it all online. But that's not enough. To sit at our desk and read about it is not enough. We have to literally, physically live it. Let me give you an example. When I read about what it is to be a therapist, I was 100% in. When I lived it, there were many pieces of it that it didn't work. A lot of very psychiatrically troubled people, a lot of people who had so much abuse and trauma that their window for change was going to be very, very, very small. And I started to realize I like to see transformation, and I like to have that in my life every day. And if the change is going to be microscopic, that's hard for me personally. That other people don't mind that at all. I have a next-door neighbor friend who works at a psychiatric hospital 16 hours a day on the weekends, both days, so that she can, that's her full-time job, and then she can be home for the kids. I would be in the hospital if I did that. I couldn't do it. And that's why each of us is different. And she loves it, and she's learning so much, and she's so happy. So each of us, you got to make yourself right, not wrong, and you have to honor who you are. The other pieces about therapy, I hate it. You think, yeah, you want to be an advocate for children, and if they're getting abused, pull them out of the family. However, when you're in the therapeutic system, you understand Department of Children and Families isn't so hot, and taking a child out of their home and throwing them into the foster system ain't so hot. So I found myself being in the middle of a rock and a hard place every day, and I didn't want it. So I would only know what that's like once I did the work. Nobody's going to tell you that. Because say you're interviewing people about being a therapist and they don't mind that. Or let's take, being an executive coach. I had to live the identity of it where a company pays me to fix an employee only to know that I hate it. I prefer when clients come to me and they are 100% sure they want to work with me, and there's nobody telling them they need to be fixed. That's living the identity of it. So you've got to find a way to take on a client, do pro bono work, volunteer, shadow intern for a brief period of time, not a year maybe, in a way that doesn't turn your entire system upside down. And you need to feel the experience of it. Here's another thing people don't do. They'll do the internship, and they won't love it. But they've attached to, well, this is my way out of my recruiting business or my bakery or my graphic design business or my corporate life that I hate, so I guess I have to love it. They don't allow themselves to feel it. The thing is, if in the internship or the shadowing or the volunteering or the pro bono client, you don't enjoy it, you're not going to enjoy it when you do it full time. So you also have to process what you've learned and continue to shape and refine the direction. Okay, I don't love digital marketing in this regard, but these four pieces I do love. So how do I incorporate that? Right? You really have to refine your direction and your decisions based on what you've tried on. All right? So we've talked about this before, but I'm going to really make it clear now. Going forward, I want you to think about the one bucket that you want to pursue for the remainder of this project, program. So the four buckets are, I want to stay where I am, number one, but I want more success or recognition or flexibility or leadership. That's number one. I want to stay in the role I'm in with the employer I'm in, but I want it different, better, more. Second bucket is, no, I want a new job. Same function, same role, but not with this employer. Number three is, nope, I'm done. I'm done with that employer. I'm done with that job. I really want a new career, I think. I want to explore that. And number four, I'm thinking of, I really want to start a new business. So what I'd like you to do is for the remainder of this program, put yourself in one of these buckets. And if you have a different one, you put yourself in there and let me know on Facebook. I have a fifth bucket. Because now I want us to focus on as much success as possible and progress within that direction. Okay? So let me give you some tips for each of these buckets that I love to call buckets. So if you want to stay where you are but you want more success, here's the steps. Here's the things you got to do. What does more success or happiness look like? You know, a lot of people say, I'm working 100 hours a week, I can't stand it. Okay, what can you do within that role to let go and not work that hard? What are the boundaries you have to form? Who do you have to delegate? What's the staff you have to hire? Who do you have to talk to? So what you have to now dimensionalize what success looks like to you. And then identify three concrete ways you can go out and get it. The greater reward, the greater success, the greater flexibility, whatever it is. Right? Some ways to do that are to figure out how you're perceived in the organization. So go and get some feedback. Right? You can do that through HR. You can do that as part of your review. But I wouldn't do it like that. I would actually elicit some feedback from people higher than you, your level, and below you about what it is to what they experience in terms of how it is to work with you, what they learn from you, how you can improve the experience of working with you. Get some feedback. Really get clear now on what you're rocking and where you need improvement. By now, I hope you have a mentor and a sponsor. They're both very important. And we've talked about how to do it, and I've written a lot about that. Go talk to your sponsor. And the person who is at a higher level than you, who has clout, ask them for help. You know, I really want this direction, or I want more of this, or I'm really looking for a raise, a 20% raise. Can you help me? Can you guide me? Can you advise me? What's the best way to do it? If you have a great relationship with your supervisor, speak to her or him about, I'm really wanting to contribute in a deeper way. And this is what that would look like for me. There's that project over here or this division or this new cause or whatever, right? and or volunteer to participate in a new project that's going to give you more. So those are just a few ideas of how to stay but get more success. All right? The second bucket is, I want a new job outside of this employer. So, again, it's first about defining, okay, what role do you want to play? And are you really equipped for it? And you can look at that on LinkedIn. You can research, you know, project manager. What are the guidelines? What are the parameters? What's the credentialing? What do I need? What's the experience, right? Once you really think, yeah, I am equipped, identify 30 potential employers. 30, right? Don't sit and wait for it to come to you. It won't. Research everything you can about these 30 potential employers that you would like to work for. Find them online. Locate contacts in LinkedIn or personal contacts you have who might be able to introduce you to somebody who works there. Reach out to 10 of the most helpful colleagues you've ever had. And you can say, you know, here's what I'm interested in. Do you know anyone who would be helpful to speak with? But part of this is knowing what you bring to the table. I'm working with a private client right now. She's been in her field 13 years. She really can't articulate what she's great at. She doesn't have any idea. You can't get a new job if you don't know what you're great at. But you got to learn how to do it. You got to learn how to figure it out. And it can't be she was saying, you know, I'm really passionate. I have great enthusiasm for. Is that something? I said, that's something interviewers are going to feel. That's not something that's going to get you a job. You need a skill set. You need experience and expertise that the employer is going to say, oh, that's exactly what we need. And passion is how you do it, and that's awesome, but that isn't going to sell you into the job. You have to know the skills and talents that make you special and the outcomes and the needles you've moved, right? And then it's about networking, networking, networking. The third bucket is, I want a new career. So let's use Sarah as an example again. You have to define that career by doing a lot of this research. So let's say it's digital marketing. Let's see if what I've just been sharing fits into these tips. So you need to find a way to live it, the professional identity of it. So that, I feel, is a shorter-term internship or a project or offering your services pro bono to, you know, the teen center in your town or the library or, you know, my daughter even in high school had an internship at the Weir Farm, which is 5 minutes from my house. It's a National Historic location. It's amazing. She got, you know, an unpaid internship, and it turned out there were two girls in the job. They leveraged their youth and their social media faculties to focus on having these girls man a campaign on Twitter and Facebook that would get younger people to come to the Weir Farm site. Fantastic. So she did this for 2 months and learned so much about how you spread the word about a historic site in the arts. And it was 2 months, and, you know, no, she wasn't paid, but it taught her some things that she loved, and it also taught her some things she doesn't want to do anymore. So that's how you do it. So also, start interviewing people who've succeeded at this thing you're thinking about, but also people who haven't. And you can find that out by talking to people. You know, who was a therapist who got out of therapy and was a coach? Who started her own business in jewelry design and is succeeding, and who stopped it, who has her own business, who's offering it on Etsy. Really become a student of people who are doing what you want to do, who've succeeded at it, and who have abandoned it, and learn why. And again, find a mentor who can help you. And create a transition plan. So here's another piece. If you're thinking of doing an 8-month internship, for instance, like Sarah is, and no money is going to come in, or $7 an hour, don't fib yourself. Look at what that's going to do to your financial health. right? Don't be in denial. If that's going to, like I was, if my master's cost $20,000 and to live cost $100,000, that means if I do that for 3 years, I'm going through $300,000. Is that what I really want to do? Okay? Create a transition plan that really works. And the fourth bucket, starting or launching a new business or a franchise. So I've mentioned some of these before, but I really want you to do these things now. Don't do it without reading the book, The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. It's tough talk about why so many small businesses fail. And it's great advice about what you're going to have to do if you really want to rock this small business. Follow me on Forbes, of course, and other entrepreneurial experts. Follow entrepreneur.com. Read about small business startup. And again, don't be in denial. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to take in all the doom and gloom and look at the statistics of whatever it is now, 80% of small businesses fail in the first 3 years, some huge number. Don't quote me. I'm not sure what the number is, but it's massive. That doesn't mean you take it all in and say, oh, forget it, I can't do it. It means you have your eyes wide open about what the challenges are, and you're reading and learning and studying how to navigate through the challenges. Almost every city has a local women's business development center. Join it. It's usually very affordable. In Connecticut here, we have a fantastic one. You can look at it at ctwbdc.org. Join it. Take the classes. You know, they have classes on P&Ls. They have classes on business plans, marketing plans, transition plans. Take it. Throw yourself into it. Start shadowing someone who's running a similar business who says you can, or volunteer there, right? Join other organizations that support entrepreneurial women's growth, right? And go to their talks, go to their events, meet people. You're going to meet mentors there. Go find score.org online, and they also have offices in many, many cities where you get free mentoring, top-level mentoring, business, marketing, financial planning, competitive analysis. Fantastic. Understand the funding necessary, what you're going to need, and what you're going to have to live off of in order to make this work. And surround yourself with entrepreneurial thinkers. This is one thing that corporate women don't tend to have. I was in corporate. You're siloed into the corporate world. And corporations and corporate thinking is not necessarily entrepreneurial thinking. It's a really different mindset and a really different way to operate in the world. And before you leap to launch your business, you need to surround yourself with entrepreneurialism and entrepreneurial thinking. And you have to kind of check yourself against it. Am I going to be comfortable with the risk? Am I courageous? That makes me stop and think. Some of you know I went to hear Gretchen Rubin speak Thursday. And it was so eye-opening, her book Better Than Before. And she talks about habits and why so many of us can't sustain even habits that we love. What is going on? And from her intense scrutiny of this topic, she came up with so many insights. But one of them is about the four different tendencies to how we deal with expectations. And I would have you race out and get this book and read this. I don't think I shared with you. I couldn't have shared it last week because I heard her Thursday night. But quickly, I want to share with you. She talks about four tendencies, and I'll tell you what they are. Think about who you are in this. The first is the upholder. And the upholder attends to outside expectations of them, what other people expect of them, as well as their internal expectations equally. So they're really trying to live up to external and internal expectations. The obliger is someone who focuses more on other people's expectations of them and doesn't attend nearly as much to what they want for themselves or what they expect of themselves. The third is the questioner, who's constantly questioning, why do I have to do this? You know, why does this rule make sense? What's behind this? They have to understand the whys and wherefores, or they just don't move forward. The fourth is the rebel, who actually doesn't attend to expectations at all, doesn't care. I don't care what's expected of me. And they don't, I guess, have, you know, a strong sense of internal expectation. And when you start looking at it that way, I'm an upholder. I have equally strong attention to external and internal. My friend who went with me to the event is an obliger. I'm married to a rebel. She's married to a questioner. Oh, it's amazing. It's so interesting. So look at yourself in terms of that and how you behave because of it. I think you'll even find it's fascinating with careers. But why I also bring it up is it helped me start looking at a foundation for tendencies people have in terms of how they approach action. And this pertains to every one of you on this call, how you go about doing anything in the world, and particularly career change. And there are six tendencies I'm seeing, and I would so love your thoughts about them. They are the doer, who is very methodical, and I have clients in every one of these tendencies. Give me the task, tell me what I'm doing, and I go do it. There's not the angst, there's not the questioning, there's just let me go do it. It's very achievement-oriented. Then there's the seeker, who wants to understand this kind of in terms of a spiritual path. How is it informing me spiritually? How is it helping my growth? How is it helping me be the person I want to be? And none of these are good or bad. They're just tendencies, approaches. The third is the researcher, who has to kind of understand, has to dig deep, do a ton of research before they take any action. They have to understand it at a deep level by immersing themselves in it through research, right? The fourth is the doubter. And I see this so much. There are people that have so much doubt that until they address the doubt or until the steps appease the doubting part of themselves, they don't move forward. I doubt I can do this. I doubt this is going to work. I doubt this is for me. I doubt I have what it takes. I doubt the economy is right. I doubt, I doubt, I doubt. And I would call it, not even questioning, I would call it doubting. And until that doubting mind is appeased by data, by research, by steps that just make that doubter feel better, there's not forward movement. The fifth is the pacer. And I have animal totems that go with all of these, but to me the pacer is the turtle. Very slow, step by step, has a big shell to protect him or herself, will make it to the end point, but it's going to be slow plodding, a slow plodding approach. And finally, the crusader. This person takes no prisoners, goes for it, will not take no for an answer, gets to the goal. And there are downsides to all of these. There's upsides and downsides, and one of the downsides, and I can be a crusader, is that you kind of can leave body parts in your wake. You really, the take no prisoners piece, you really can disturb and perturb other people's systems by how crusading you are. So I would love you to think about this and tell me what you think. And I can certainly post this on Facebook. This is a beginning to a new book that I'm writing. And I would love if you see yourself in any one of these. And in fact, if you do, let me know now or put that on Facebook. Doer, seeker, researcher, doubter, pacer, and crusader. And again, I have to flesh this out much more with research, but I'd love to hear what you think. And some people ask me, you know, is this how you do everything? Because I think I'm some of all of these. Yes, I think we can be all of these at some point, but I think we have a dominant way we're comfortable. And sometimes a life event can change how we go about things. Like I wasn't a crusader. Well, actually, I did have some crusading tendencies even as a youngster, as a teen. So think about that. But get Gretchen Rubin's book, Better Than Before, about how we can adopt and sustain habits that are going to make our lives happier. And let me know what you think about these. Ooh, interesting stuff. All right, so to wrap this up, have you tried it on? Do you know that it fits? And are you not running away? And you want to make sure when you're trying it on that it is going to align with the key things that matter to you in your life, which include your personality, your mission in life, your purpose. And if you don't know what your life purpose is, we have to help you figure that out. Like for me, it's to be a change agent. That's what I want to be in the world. That's what I care about, helping people transform. And if I'm not doing that, and if I'm focusing tons of effort on work that doesn't help me do that, I'm not happy, right? So we got to make ourselves right and honor our tendencies and find work that fits. Also your values, your financial needs, your family values, your geographic preferences, the lifestyle you want to maintain, your natural talents, the skills you like to use, and the people that you respect. The best direction aligns with those things. All right, my friends, are we ready to make it happen here? All right, so I bet this has brought up some questions. Raise your hand, star two. Send me your questions online. Got 10 more minutes. I love it. Woo! Let me go to the questions online first. Wendy. Hi, Wendy. So Wendy says hello. So transitioning to a new career when need to learn new skills. Thoughts on realistically trying it on. Sometimes I keep thinking to go back to the less than loved world and improve with building niche. But really, I want to change fields. FYI, I too am older, 55, and interested in a master's program, but I have made attempts in the past to try it on, but always in the field that wasn't in my heart. All right, Wendy, I think I'm understanding this. But you say a lot of things here. Are you too old to transition? What I would want to know from you, first of all, I don't believe we're ever too old to do what we want to do. However, at 55, what is it that you're interested in? Let's say it's therapy. It's fine. You can start your own practice as a therapist, you know, at 55. But it takes 3 years, right? So you'd be 58. So the question is it going to be a fit? And so often people think they want something. I can't tell you how many times people say, I want to be a therapist in their list of dreams. But when I talk to them about it, they don't want to be a therapist. They don't want the life of that, 9 to 6, you know, working with client after client or working in a social services agency. They don't want it. What they want is a way to help people, and they think that being a therapist is the way they want to do it. But really, it is not a fit. So, Wendy, help me help you. What is it that you're thinking of doing? And it depends, you know, if you certain careers are going to be tougher for you to do it after a master's program and make it work. So let me know what it is and let's talk about it. But if you really want to change fields, let's talk about how you can do that. You've made attempts in the past to try it on, but always in the field that wasn't in my heart. Well, forget it then. Here's the deal. If you put a lot of effort to something that in your heart you don't want, you will not succeed. You might get it off the ground, but something bad will happen. Your body will break down. You'll get cancer. You'll have a crisis in terms of a toxic narcissistic boss. We don't sustain things that we hate. I hope that helps, Wendy. Send me more, okay, about what you're specifically thinking of, and let me really specifically help you. Bethany says, do you think a person can be a combination of these tendencies, like a researcher and a doubter? Yes, I think a combination, but I do think if you peel the onion, you're going to see a dominant tendency that is everywhere. So, for instance, if you're a doubter, of course you're going to be a researcher because the research helps you not doubt. But what I'm looking for is what's the knee-jerk reaction you have to making change? Do you immediately go to the place of doubting? Immediately. You know, the two people who I've worked with this week who I said, I think you're a doubter, I said, what do you think? They go, oh, my God, I'm a doubter. And they didn't want to be a doubter. They said, I'd rather be a crusader. One said, I'd rather be a crusader, and one said, I'd rather be a doer. And I don't mean it negatively. I just mean, what is the knee-jerk baseline reaction your system has to change? And I think if you answer that honestly, you're going to see who you really are. Tell me if that makes sense. All right, let me go back to who raised their hand. Hello, Bellevue, Washington.
Hello. Hi, Kathy. Hello.
Hi, who is it?
This is Lisa Cook.
Hi, Lisa. How's it going?
Kathy, it's going pretty well. I'm almost through your book. I'm doing a lot of work, a lot of thinking, and I needed your guidance around kind of a specific issue. It took me all of these weeks to uncover a few events in my career and training that mm-hmm. I realized I did easily, with satisfaction, joy, oh. and that got great results.
Oh.
I'm having trouble identifying the skill set and how that might relate to a position or a job. And I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling
okay.
putting this together.
Go ahead. Let her
rip. They both occurred when I was working in clinical pathology, so not in anatomic pathology, reading slides, but in the laboratory.
Okay.
And they both revolved around basically client service. I had one mom, I got a frazzled call one early Saturday morning about a mom who brought her daughter in. She was on an acne treatment and they needed labs. And, of course, the physician's office, who was treating her, forgot to request the labs.
Okay.
So it was a relatively easy thing to handle, and they basically said, look, it's a 50-mile, one-way drive. Please don't make me drive home and then drive back kind of thing. And so I handled it fairly readily, but months later what came up was this woman had written a letter to the president of the medical school, and he
wow.
submitted that letter to all of the chairmen at every department, and she kind of delineated what happened and why she's a patient there, because we give good client service, we care about the patient, and she mentioned my name, she mentioned other people's
yeah.
names. So that's one instance, and it's been a long time ago. And then the other one was
let me stop you
yeah.
right there, and let's
sure.
dimensionalize that.
Sure.
So what did you do specifically that you enjoyed doing?
The whole process was, I kind of troubleshooted the situation. I did not know what the doctor would want to request, but I easily got a hold of another dermatologist and figured out, asked them, what would you do if this patient was on this drug, and what labs would you want to see Monday, for this patient. So I kind of integrated, I kind of had to contact a number of people, integrate the information that they gave me with the problem, and make a call and make the decision.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello, hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Hello. I can hear you.
Oh, my gosh. What did you all hear?
Music. Very beautiful music. we heard the moderator has left the conference and some delightful kind of piano ballet music.
Oh, good Lord. I'm sorry. I think it was I've been on my phone for so long that it died, and I have to call with my other phone. So sorry. All right. I was as far, guy, everyone hang on here. Don't hang up the call if you're interested in getting to the bottom of this. So as far as I got was you saying you problem solved, right?
Yeah.
And
I
what
made
else
her
did
life
say?
Well, and I helped somebody who came in. It was kind of both of these events have kind of been things that are a little outside the routine, and they need kind of a special assessment where you look over the situation and say, yes, please do A, B, and C, and we will be fine Monday, and this will work. You know, so it's kind of gathering a little bit of information and making my best guess and judgment about how to take care of this person in this situation, and being right.
So let me just ask that, because I don't know your work. That does not sound like something that should be that far out of what you do every day.
You know, it's funny. It's because pathology is divided into anatomic pathology, which is sitting at a microscope, versus clinical pathology, which is this type of work, you know, a lot of troubleshooting. I was supposed to have been able to take a more of a role in clinical pathology, but the gentleman ahead of me, an older person, older gentleman, could not hand that power off. He simply could not do it. He would give me scut work. He would give me, you know, things that needed to be done, and I did my very best and did well, but he could not ultimately hand over the title to me to be able to have that job. It was just, it's an ego thing, frankly.
And Lisa, you can't work anywhere else?
Oh, yes, I can work other places, yes. This just came to me like yesterday, Kathy.
Yeah.
Yes, I can work other places. I can move. I can.
Let me just mm-hmm. answer your question. You mm-hmm. said, I don't know how to identify the skill set around what I love to do. Well, you just did. And not only did you, you said, yeah, that is work that I wanted, but because of this ass, I can't.
Yes, yes.
Well, you just answered your perfect question. You should be in the client services, the clinical piece of it.
Okay.
Is that hard to do?
No, it is not hard to do. It's not hard, but it will require me to start making some phone calls with my, you know, colleagues who are a little closer to that work and can help guide me to, I haven't done this, therefore, in years, you know, so I'm board certified in it. I'm credentialed to do it,
Lisa.
But I just haven't done it. So I don't know where to step next, but I think I'll have some colleagues with some great ideas. I'm excited.
I love it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm kind of coming home, you know, to something that I always did love.
You're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
No, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and I just feel it's a little area of my work that I have not really optimized, but that's where I naturally fit. I feel that's where I naturally fit
as a
result of going through these weeks of brainstorming, and I'm telling you, it just came out yesterday. I just started writing these things down and went, oh my goodness, this is where I got recognition. This is where I felt good.
And also,
so anyway,
you're helping people. You are helping live human beings, and you can feel that.
Yes.
And you need that.
Yes, I do feel I need that. And this was absolutely unequivocally patient care. Absolutely. I did it with like a small team of people, like two or three other people were with me in this. You know, it wasn't just me. And I like that, too.
I love this. Now, I'm sorry I didn't get to, because I fell off the call, I didn't get to hear your second thing, but I'm praying that it does it feed into this first?
The second one was a lab that refused to make eye drops for a patient based on an investigational protocol at the NIH, and we took on the risk of doing it and saved her sight.
It was
written up in the little hospital thing. And again, I worked with a pharmacist and I worked with a lab technician to get this done. And I wasn't mentioned, and I don't have to be, but I just felt good that they got it done. The patient came into the pharmacy, got her drops, saved her sight, you know, but another lab in the area, labs in the area would not touch this.
Let me tell you what I think. I think you're a crusader. And if
I
you
feel
don't,
right now like a crusader.
And if you don't have that capability in your work, you can't be happy. If you can't advocate for – the other one was advocating for this person.
Yes.
Like, this poor woman, no, I'm not going to make her drive all over creation, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it, damn it.
Exactly.
And if you
want her to come back on Monday, exactly.
And if you can't crusade, you feel wasted.
That's exactly it. I do. I like to help people.
Wow.
And I like to have impact, but I don't like it only me. I like it as a team. You know, I like having others support this too, because that's how I know it's going well and not like off on some kind of crazy, you know, tangent. So, yeah.
Right.
So I like a small team. I like an effective small team that takes care of people and does it to the best of our ability. And, you know, we do our best, and that's what I like.
God. Well, I think you're on a roll, my girl. I think it sounds amazing.
So you think this little clinical path is where I need to
I love
venture
it.
Next? Okay.
I love it
All
for
right.
five different reasons. You're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You're too accomplished. I'm not saying that the ultimate may be not something very different, but you're too accomplished to throw it all out. There's too much there. Number two, I think you're a crusader and you want to make a difference in people's lives. Well, what better way to do it than with all the amazing years of experience that you have, right?
Yes.
The third thing would be that it's time that you start talking about what you want. You need to make the phone calls. You need to be, you know, and boy, get my goat. I'm a crusader too. This horse's ass that won't give you the work that you need or didn't, we're not going to be stopped by that. We can't be. Because there are people that get in our way that close us down, and we can't allow it.
Yep.
So
that's
it's
what
time
happened,
that you,
Kathy. Yes.
I know. So it's time that you crusade for yourself here now. All
okay.
right? Yay! Okay. Keep us posted. I'm really excited.
I am too. Thanks, Kathy, so much. Thank you.
All right, everyone. I'm so sorry I fell off the call. Thank you. I'm loving it. Share your questions on Facebook. This is the time. Rubber is meeting the road. Laura and I are going to be on the Facebook page a lot, helping you. Let's get you to your goal by week 16. Okay, everyone? Can't wait to talk to you next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
The moderator has...